Welcome to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner. Our sponsor is Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? Last couple of weeks, I did the show solo because Jonathan Schweitzer was traveling the world. He's on a missions trip, actually, in the Middle East and Israel. And he'll be back shortly, and then we'll get back on track with having panel discussions about things that we think are important to be discussing. And what I've been doing is catching up on emails. And, you know, I feel badly about the way last week's show ended. If you were listening to last week's show, I was in the middle of a really powerful email and wasn't keeping a close enough look on the clock and ran out of time. This isn't going to help you if you missed the first part of it last week, except I will tell you that the show is now podcasted on the website. So go to WFMD.com, go to the Audio Vault section of the website, find the Faith Debate, look for last week's show, which would be the March 16th show. Listen to the end of that, and now then you could listen to this one on the podcast, which would be the March 23rd show, and you can get the whole email, piece it together yourself. So here's where we left off last week as we go through our email bag. It's talking about Iwo Jima, that famous photograph that's been turned into statue, with the guys raising the flag, and John Bradley, who wrote a book about that. His father was one of those who was pictured there. Was talking about the various men who were putting that flag up. And then it gets to the point about, he's talking about his dad here, and people thought he was a hero. And he says, "You see, my dad didn't see himself as a hero. Everyone thinks these guys are heroes because they're in a photo on a monument. My dad knew better. He was a medic. John Bradley from Wisconsin was a caregiver. In Iwo Jima, he probably held over 200 boys as they died. And when boys died at Iwo Jima, they writhed and screamed in pain. When I was a little boy, my third grade teacher told me that my dad was a hero. When I went home and told my dad that, he looked at me and said, 'I want you always to remember that the heroes of Iwo Jima are the guys who did not come back. Did not come back.'" So that's the story about six nice young boys. Three died on Iwo Jima. Three came back as national heroes. Overall, 7,000 boys died in Iwo Jima in the worst battle in the history of the Marine Corps. My voice is given out, so I'll end here. Thank you for your time. Again, that's John Bradley quoted as speaking here. Now back to the person who's writing the email. Suddenly, the monument wasn't just a big old piece of metal with a flag sticking out on top. It came to life before our eyes with the heartfelt words of a son who did indeed have a father who was a hero. Maybe not a hero for the reasons most people would believe, but a hero nonetheless. Let us never forget, from the Revolutionary War to the current war on terrorism and all the wars in between, that sacrifice was made for our freedom. Remember to pray praises for this great country of ours, and also pray for those still in murderous unrest around the world. Stop and thank God for being alive and being free at someone else's sacrifice. Remember, every day that you can wake up free, it's going to be a great day. It's a great story worth your time. Please pass along. You know, that is powerful. And I got to say, again, you know, from a Christian perspective, we've talked about this on the show numerous times, but this whole idea of, you know, being free and being set free because of the sacrifice of others, boy, that's a Christian message right there. You know, because of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, you know, the Christian message is that now believers have freedom in Christ. See, so there's always a way to pull around. You know, it's something that strikes me, not always, but pretty much, I don't even say most of the time, an awful lot of the time, that seems like a safe way to put it, an awful lot of the time, I'll read an email or I'll see something in a book or on a TV show or movie, you know, just idle conversation with somebody, whatever. The things that somebody might say, or a song on the radio even, whatever. The point behind what is being presented might not be religious, at least its intent might not be religious or Christian in any way, shape, or form. But it's amazing how often you can pick up on things that are religious or Christian in orientation or tied to something that's Christian in orientation if you choose to see it that way. It's fascinating to me. I wish I did a better job taking notes of that sort of thing because you could probably write a book about it. There's my idea. Go write a book and make a bunch of money. All right. This email is titled "The Rise and Fall of Democracy." About the time our original 13 states adopted their new constitution in 1787, Alexander Tyler, a Scottish history professor at the University of Edinburgh, had this to say about the fall of the Athenian Republic some 2,000 years prior. "A democracy is always temporary in nature," it says. It simply cannot exist as a permanent form of government. That's interesting. A democracy will continue to exist up until the time that voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates who promise the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that every democracy will finally collapse due to loose fiscal policy, which is always followed by a dictatorship. Interesting. The average age of the world's greatest civilizations from the beginning of history has been about 200 years. During those 200 years, these nations always progress through the following sequence. All right, let's see if this applies to America. The first step in the sequence, from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence, from dependence back into bondage. Professor Joseph Olson of Hamline University School of Law in St. Paul, Minnesota, points out some interesting facts concerning the 2000 presidential election. So this is going back, you know, a couple of elections. The population of counties won by Al Gore, 127 million. The population of the counties won by George Bush, 143 million. The square miles. So, you know, Bush won the population, when you do it that way, Bush won the population vote. How's that possible? Oh, okay, because it's, I gotcha, it's just the whole county counts. Okay, so if you go county by county, Bush had a narrow margin of victory there. Square miles of land won by Gore. Square miles of land won by Gore, about 500,000. For George Bush, about 2.5 million. Wow. States won by Gore, 19. By Bush, 29. The murder rate, does that add up to 50? I don't think so. Are we missing some states? I guess they're putting a couple of states up as ties. The murder rate per 100,000 residents in counties that were won by Gore, 13.2. For Bush, 2.1. Interesting. Professor Olson adds, in aggregate, the map of the territory Bush won was mostly the land owned by the tax-paying citizens of this great country. Gore's territory mostly encompassed those citizens living in government-owned tenements and living off government welfare. Huh. All right. Olson believes the United States is now somewhere between the complacency and apathy phase of Professor Tyler's definition of democracy, with some 40% of the nation's population already having reached the governmental dependency phase. Passes along to help everyone realize just how much is at stake, knowing that apathy is the greatest danger to our freedom. And then it goes, P.S., if the Senate grants amnesty and citizenship to all the millions of criminal invaders called illegals and they vote, then goodbye USA in less than 5 years. I don't know if that's true or not, but yeah, this is kind of a political thing. But, you know, let's look at that again. You go from bondage to spiritual faith to great courage, courage to liberty, liberty to abundance. So far, so good. Now you're at the halfway point. You peak. But then you go from abundance to complacency. Now, let's not make this political. Let's not, or at least let's not make this geopolitical. Let's make this Christo-political. Think about the church. Has the church grown into a sense of complacency through the abundance that is to be found in Christ? And has that complacency given sway to apathy? And has apathy made us dependent? Dependent on the church as an institution, dependent on the charismatic leadership of a pastor, dependent on the government, if you want to go back to this email. Have we become dependent? Has the church, have by church I mean the individuals that make up the church, the body of believers, become dependent because they're apathetic and complacent? One wonders. If so, then you don't enjoy the true riches that that your faith has in store for you. Maybe you're not truly the Christian that you think you are. And if that's the case, back into bondage. Anyway, just a thought. This email... Let's see. Can I read this? Okay. I don't know if I'm going to read all of this, but I am going to say that as I'm looking at this now, here's an email that is supposedly from a Christian. It's slugged. The person who writes it is named Alan or Elaine or something like that. And it bills themselves as, or themself, as a conservative Christian who is politically active. Okay. Well, I mean, that's fine. You can be politically active and Christian and conservative. That all fits. But then it says things like, help me tick off some liberals. I mean, is that a Christian attitude? Christians are supposed to be going around trying to upset people who disagree with them politically? Is that? And then it's got some disparaging remarks with some double entendre kind of stuff maybe built in. I'm not related to Bill Clinton. Not sure that's something a Christian should be writing. Let's see. Can I read this? I'm trying to find something I can read here. I think I can read this. The Orwellian language gap. In his 1948 novel, 1984, George Orwell introduces the concept of, it's like political. There's a typo here. I can't quite read it, but it has to do with, politically correct speech kind of thing. His novel describes linguistic reduction. Oh, there's the word I'm looking for. That's what he was saying here. As a way for the state to control human perception and human thought. Orwell's hypothesis states that concepts that cannot be expressed with words cease to exist. When language is limited, so is human perception and thought. That's interesting. Concepts that cannot be expressed with words cease to exist. I'm not sure if that's entirely accurate or not. I will say from a religious standpoint, it's interesting because Christians, particularly, talk about Jesus as the Word of God and the written Word, and God spoke things into existence and things like that. So there definitely is power in words. But I wonder if this person who's trying to anger liberals takes the argument a little too far. Here's a story that asks about whether cross-dressing activists will come to your school. Okay. Let's see. There's nothing totally wrong about that. I probably should have screened this before I got on the air to do the show. Here's what this little blurb has to say. As our children have returned to public schools, they face a new threat to their sense of morality and sexuality. Transgender activists are targeting children for seduction into gender confusion. I will agree that there is a little bit of it almost seems like there's an agenda there. I don't want to overstate it, though, but it does seem like there's some encouraging of gender confusion in pop culture, particularly late night television and some of the sitcoms and some movies today. But I don't want to seem like there's this vast conspiracy because I'm not sure that there is. I don't think it's quite as insidious as that. Dangerous, but I don't think it's all that orchestrated. McCullough's Clarion Call. American history is being lost. It's up to Americans, parents, teachers, mentors to reclaim it and pass it on to the younger generations. Yeah, okay. Freedom of religion and undue IRS intrusion. All right, this got to be an interesting blurb. The Internal Revenue Service has notified pastors all over America that the IRS will be monitoring the content of sermons. If there were anything political, the IRS would initiate action to withdraw any applicable tax exemption. The IRS stated it will not wait for the ACLU or People United for Separation of Church and State to file a complaint. No siree. What does the IRS consider political? That is not clear, but it appears to be subjective, agent by agent. This development is deeply troubling. In fact, it bothers me more than about anything that goes on these days, and that says a lot. There's a couple of things about that issue, by the way. On the one hand, pastors need to speak the truth. And they need to speak the truth consistently from the pulpit. And if that truth sometimes touches on things that some might consider to be political in nature, and that can be subjective, I suppose, then that shouldn't be restricted, it seems to me. However, it's not so much of the government at this stage anyway is passing a law saying that the pastors can't say those things. What it is saying is you can't say those things and still have tax-exempt status. So maybe Christian pastors have a choice to make. Maybe they should say, okay, forget our tax-exempt status. We'll pay our taxes just like everybody else. So leave me alone. I can say what I want. Maybe that's the answer. Now, that could create a hardship on some churches because a lot of them are getting by on, you know, there's this great lie that, you know, the churches are getting fat, dumb, rich, and happy. And, you know, that might be true for some of them. But boy, you know, I've had an opportunity to meet an awful lot of pastors doing this show, and most of them are scrimping and scraping and struggling to get by, to feed their families, and to keep their church afloat. It's tough. It's a tough, tough gig. You know, so it's an easy thing to say, oh, well, you know, start paying taxes because maybe the taxes aren't there. But then that speaks to another issue. They wouldn't have an issue paying taxes if the people going to church would do what the Bible commands them and tithe. It's pathetic what we as church members give to support our churches. It's absolutely pathetic. The plate comes around, we throw a dollar in. Is that even close? Now, I understand if all you have is a dollar. I get it. That's cool. That's a generous gift. Don't get me wrong. But for somebody who's making $50,000 a year, $75,000 a year, $100,000 plus a year, a dollar a week, is that going to cut it? Is that anywhere near what you should be giving? Oh, I don't give a dollar. I throw a five in. Okay. $5 when you're making $100,000 a year? Hello? Oh, I throw a 20 in. The point is, you know, on the one hand, we complain that society is not going the direction we want it to. We want to blame the government for not doing enough. And where are the churches in all of this? And then we don't want to put our money where our mouth is. You know, Malachi 3:10 says, you know, to bring your entire tithe into the storehouse and you will be rewarded, and to test God in this. And, you know, it's become a cliche now, but it's the one place in the Bible where God actually encourages believers to test him. He wants to bless you. Let him bless you. Support the church. Bring your full tithe into the storehouse. All right. You think I was one of the pastors on the panel on this show. By the way, you're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner. We're catching up on some emails. This is slugged. Imagine if D-Day were today. Color me askance, but the last time I kicked an angry dog, he reacted angrily. That's got to be hyperbole, right? Who goes around kicking angry dogs? Anyway, usually you only kick angry dogs when they're attacking you because you know they will attack. You know that until they attack you, you might have other options. But once they have decided to chew your calf off, you'd better quickly become, in the dog's mind, the absolutely superior, absolutely dominant organism. When it's the law of the jungle, he who can kick hardest and most frequently wins the discussion. Huh. Now, again, I want to remind you, these are all blurbs from this same person purporting to be a conservative Christian. So is this what conservatives stand for? And more importantly, is this what Christians stand for? The idea that he who can kick the hardest and most frequently wins the discussion. What about the meek shall inherit the earth? What about the fruit of the Spirit, which includes, you know, gentleness and kindness and self-control? You know? Come on. If you're going to call yourself a Christian, at least espouse some Christian values. And if you're not going to espouse Christian values, then expect those who do to call you out on it. Let's see. PTA parents must file illegal alien educational spending. It says PTA parents, what does this say? Your child wants to play football or play in the school band or the soccer team. Well, you already know you have to dig a little deeper into your wallet due to school budget cuts. While the cost to parents handing out cash in order to keep their children in these extracurricular activities keeps going up, another part of state educational budget is actually exploding, because those dollars are being diverted to educating illegal alien children because of an ill-conceived and little-known 1982 U.S. Supreme Court case called Plyer versus Doe. Yeah, you know, that's interesting. It's been an issue in the presidential election because of Mike Huckabee's stance on amnesty, and compared to the other Republican candidates' stance on amnesty for illegals, and some measures that Mike Huckabee took in his state to provide for the possibility for scholarships for the children of illegal immigrants. And, you know, those are some fair points. I can understand the heart sensitivity that Mike Huckabee is trying to demonstrate there, that, you know, hey, it's not the kids' fault that their parents, you know, came into this country illegally. And these kids, you know, despite some obstacles that come with their parents being illegals, have fought and struggled and done a good job in school to learn and to get good grades, and so we should reward that. The problem is we're not rewarding children in Colombia or Mexico or Spain or France or Iraq or Russia. You know, those students are working really hard to earn good grades and to learn, so why don't we give them free scholarships to our state institutions here in the United States as well? You know, I think it's a fair point. Then there's some stuff here about Google supports some sort of abortion thing and same-sex marriage foes, and I don't know. This guy goes on and on and on. He kind of rants and rails. I know, it makes me nervous. I'm not saying that this is as bad as the Westboro Bible Church folks out of Kansas, but, you know, I got to wonder if somebody, you know, it says in the Bible, from a Christian point of view, it says in the Bible that they will know you, meaning Christians, that they will recognize you as a Christian by your fruit. And when you're going to put out very vicious, vindictive kind of stuff, yeah, sure, you occasionally slip up, make a mistake, whatever, that's fine. You ask for forgiveness and you work to do better. But when that's what defines you and that's the kind of stuff you're consistently putting out, you know, you're not doing the cause of the kingdom any favors. Let me put it that way. All right, here's an email. Slug line is, are you paying attention? It says, this is the transcription of the actual radio conversation between the British and the Irish off the coast of Kerry, Ireland, in October of 1998. The radio conversation was released by the Chief of Naval Operations on October 10th, 1998. The Irish. Please divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. The British. Recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the north to avoid a collision. You can see where this is going. The Irish. Negative. You will have to divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. The British. This is the captain of a British Navy ship. I say again, divert your course. The Irish. Negative. I say again, you will have to divert your course. This reminds me of some people I know, so the person says here in the email. Stubborn, proud, competitive, no one's going to mess with us. Then again, here's the conclusion of the conversation. British. This is the aircraft carrier HMS Britannia, the second largest ship in the British Atlantic Fleet. We are accompanied by three destroyers, three cruisers, and numerous support vessels. Demand you change your course 15 degrees north. I say again, that is 15 degrees north, or countermeasures will be undertaken to ensure the safety of this ship. Irish. We are a lighthouse. Your call. You know, let me pontificate for a moment. Imagine one person is the stubborn British, all puffed up, self-important, powerful, and someone else is the Irish, seemingly insignificant as we view things in our self-importance. We don't want to give them the time of day. We don't want to give them any say in our life. We don't want to listen to them. We're going to do it our way. No matter what, I don't care who they think they are. Now think about that Irish, that someone being God. Is that how we live our lives? Is that how we treat people? Is that what we do? We treat people as though we're God? God is the lighthouse. he tells you to correct your course by 15 degrees, by golly, you better do it. You better not expect God to correct his course. God's got his course laid in already. He's got it mapped out perfectly. And there will be a collision. And it will not be a pleasant one if you don't listen. Anyway, that's enough of a sermon for now. I'm Troy Skinner. You're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. I want to thank our sponsor, Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? Check out our website. Go to WFMD.com. Look for the Faith Debate page. You can email me at troy@WFMD.com. Glad to share your emails if appropriate on the website or on the show at some point. All right? And I'd like to reply when I can too. Thanks for listening. God bless.